Hello and welcome to the first ever Brits and Pieces MMA podcast. I'm your host, Duncan Price, owner/editor/dogsbody for the website. We thought it was about time we got some live content out there, and since we're too poor to be able to afford to do video, we thought we might as well give podcasting a go. Just to give you a brief rundown of the show, we're going to go through UFC 172, the results, cover our pick zone section, which I'll explain a bit more about later. Then we'll go through some hot topics, some sort of things that on the radar for MMA fans at the moment. Then we've got a bit of Q&A, been emailed some questions to answer for you guys. That should just about do it. So that's just a brief rundown of what's going to be happening on today's show. What I'll do is I'll just give you a very brief outline of the website and of myself, just so you know, go up front, you know, what is happening. So, as I say, my name is Duncan Price. I'm the owner/editor of Brits and Pieces MMA. I first got into MMA, I saw a brawl at the Albert Hall, not live, but on TV. I think it was UFC 38. That was the first one I ever saw, and I was absolutely hooked. Been keeping an eye on things ever since. The first UFC I actually attended was UFC 75, which I've got a feeling probably be many British fans' sort of first event. I've tried to add them up, and I think so far I've been to 12 other events, including 3 in Vegas, but I may have forgotten a fight night here and there, so don't, you know, bust my chops on that one. Basically, I got into writing about it for the legendary UK site MMA Hit Pit, sadly no longer with us. From there, moved over to a US site called the MMA Corner, which is very popular. It's getting much bigger over in the States now, and there's some great writers over there. I used to do a weekly piece for them called Brits and Pieces, which basically covered British mixed martial arts, sort of for the American fans British people, sorry, in America, sort of thing. So that's kind of where I got the name for my site. I don't write for them anymore. It's a very amicable split. It's just a time situation. I couldn't give them as much time, unfortunately, as they needed. So I decided, why not start your own site? So here we are. We cover MMA from a British perspective. I'd like to say that we could get more MMA in regards to Cage Warriors, UCMMA, the local promotions or regional or national promotions. At the moment, it's not really feasible. We don't have the size of staff to cover it all. So primarily, we concentrate on the UFC, but we try to put a British spin on it. And obviously, we concentrate heavily when we do have an event over here on the sort of things surrounding that and making sure that's all covered. So that's a little bit about myself, a little bit about the site. Just trying to think if I've missed anything out, really. No, that seems about it. I think I've covered all the bases on that one. So what we'll do is we'll go into Pick Zone, which is, I should explain, is there's one or two regular features on the site, and actually Pick Zone is one of them. Basically, myself and my two colleagues, the deputy editor, Mr. Paul Anderson, and the features editor, Mr. Fraser Ryan, we basically pick what we think is going to happen each fight. Nothing too complicated, you know, not a million paragraphs or anything. We just basically say who we think is going to win, the method, and the round. So we obviously did it here for UFC 172. What I'll do is I'll probably mainly go through the main card, but I'll also cover a bit of the preliminary card in it. And also we can have kind of a discussion about the fights as we go along. So let's crack on with that. First of all, we had John Jones beat Glover Teixeira via unanimous decision. Actually, all three of us went for John Jones, although we actually all three went for a TKO victory. So I guess what you can glean from that is that we expected Teixeira to sort of cave in at some point, and actually, to be fair to him, he didn't. He did take a lot of shots, and he definitely didn't win the fight, but fair play to him, he made it to a decision, so, you know, many people who have fought Jones haven't, so, you know, credit to him. I thought Jones looked good, very good, I suppose you could say, but I still thought there were a few holes in his game. I still thought Glover tagged him a few times, and I mean, I know you could say that, you know, his chin was solid, and that's true, but then, arguably, when he fought a better striker or a more tactical striker in Gustafsson, he fell foul of those shots a lot more often, and the fight was a lot closer. So, while I think John Jones probably is the pound for pound best in the world, do I think he can be beaten? Yes, I do. I just don't think anyone's come up with the exact formula to do that. But I've got a feeling that Gustafsson may do in the next fight. But we'll come to that in another show. So the second, the co-main event, Anthony Johnson beat Phil Davis via unanimous decision. Actually, all three of us went for Davis on this one. Obviously, I can't speak for my colleagues, but my sort of thought process going into it was that Davis would probably be able to take Johnson down. We know Johnson has some wrestling ability, but I don't think we realised how good it was, if that makes sense. He'd only really shown it a few times before against non-wrestlers, and I think that played into our thinking that that Davis would probably be able to get him down and then kind of just grind on him and maybe get two of the three rounds, and we actually all went for Davis via decision on that one. But obviously, in actuality, I'm sure you've all seen the fight. It was virtually the opposite. It was Anthony Johnson just absolutely handled Phil Davis from basically start to finish. He had the wrestling ability to keep it standing, and on the feet he was just streets ahead. So I think it really does go to show that Phil Davis has got a lot to learn in the light heavyweight division. Can he ever get back up there? Can he adapt? I mean, I know they did reference the fact he's only been learning MMA for 5 or 6 years, but I've got a feeling that Jones is probably around the same amount of time, and Jones would just obliterate Phil Davis at this stage. So I don't know. I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely that Phil Davis will ever hold the light heavyweight title. But, you know, stranger things have happened. So, you know, we'll just have to keep on, you know, keeping an eye out for him. There's some interesting fights up there in the light heavyweight division for him still, although he may have to fight some sort of lower contenders, somebody, say, just outside the top 10, or, you know, maybe just inside, because of that loss. And Johnson, hopefully he goes the other way and fights someone in maybe the top 5 if someone becomes free or there's an injury. You just never know in this sport. So the third fight on the card was Luke Rockhold. He beat Tim Boesch via submission by Kimura. I mean, I was very impressed with Rockhold. I haven't seen a lot of him. I've seen a couple of his Strikeforce fights. I don't know, I kind of almost had him in the... I know he beat Tim Kennedy, but I kind of had him in the Tim Kennedy bracket of quite good in Strikeforce, but probably will get found out in the UFC. And actually, barring his debut in the UFC, which I think he lost, I can't remember whether it was via decision or, I'm pretty sure he lost his first fight, and I wasn't massively impressed by him. But ever since, he's been on an absolute tear. Tim Boach is one of those guys who very rarely gets manhandled. He's quite often in a bit of a war, and sometimes he comes back towards the end of the fight. But Rockhold just absolutely tore him a new one. There are probably about 10 or 15 different ways he could have finished that fight, but the Kimura got it done. Looking at what we picked, we all thought it was going to go to a decision, which again kind of is testament to what we thought, how tough we thought Boch and probably Rockhold would be, that they wouldn't get finished. Myself and Fraser actually went for Rockhold via decision, and Paul took Boch via decision. So yeah, sort of a varied opinion on that one, but I think a lot of people thought it would probably be a relatively close fight. But we all thought it was going to go the whole distance, and actually it was the complete opposite. So just, it's one of those things where you just, this sport is so exciting because you do not know what's going to happen at any time. You know, you think something's going to be a boring 3-round drudge fest, and it actually turns out to be a really exciting fight, which means you can't miss any action on these cards. It's, you know, you could miss what the best fight on the whole event. So the next one, Jim Miller defeated Yancy Medeiros via submission, guillotine choke. Again, Miller pretty much destroyed Medeiros. The only thing I would say is that Medeiros did step up from fighting. I think he was due to fight someone who actually got scratched in the end. I can't remember who it was now, but they moved Medeiros up from the undercard, which obviously left his original opponent without a fight, and I've got a feeling that guy had his fight scratched. I'm trying to think who it was, but it might come back to me. But my point being really that Yancy Medeiros didn't really have any business being in the ring with Jim Miller, but the UFC did what they thought was best to kind of try and make it competitive. We actually all picked Jim Miller to win, and to give Fraser and Paul credit, they actually picked Miller to win via submission. Second round, I think he won in the first round, but I'm not going to nitpick. That's a good call. I went for Miller via decision. I'm not sure if I realised that Yancy Medeiros was stepping up from another fight when I made that pick. So that may have sort of played into my thinking of, you know, that Miller would probably grind one out over 3 rounds. But, you know, hey, we all thought Miller was going to win, and he did. So you can't really say, you know, much fairer than that. The opening fight on the main card was Max Holloway. He defeated Andre Feely via submission. There's quite a lot of hype around Feely, sort of on the underground before this fight. Quite a lot of people had picked him to beat Holloway, even though Holloway himself, probably a couple of years back when he was sort of starting in the UFC, was probably equally as hyped. You know, had a couple of notable victories and close fights. Actually, I picked Feely to win via TKO in the third round, and Paul picked Feely to win via decision. So all credit goes to Fraser. He picked Holloway via decision. Didn't get the exact method of victory, but he still thought Holloway was going to win, so we kind of give credit for that. You know, if you pick the winner, I think that's pretty good. And then obviously, you know, if you manage to pick the decision and the result and the round, then, you know, that's even better. But, you know, I think, yeah, we tend to give credit to our guys if they pick the correct winner. So I won't go through the pick zone picks and everything for the undercard. Maybe just a couple of notes. Benavidez, I thought, looked good. He didn't start off the fight brilliantly against Elliot, and Elliot looked like he might pose him some trouble. But it's kind of one of those, I kind of viewed it as one of those ones where the class comes through in the end. Although Elliot kind of did a few things to kind of throw Benavidez off his game, it kind of was starting to edge towards Benavidez just waiting for some sort of opportunity, you know, and he got it, and he sunk in the guillotine, and he won. And that's what, you know, the top level fighters do. You know, they're not just all stuff and nonsense. You know, they get stuff done. So, you know, fair play to him. Gomi versus Flag. I've got a feeling that might have won fight of the night. That was a good fight. I mean, they were both pretty tired after about probably halfway through the second round. But they still kept swinging. You know, fair play to him. Anything could have happened. And I thought, I probably agreed with that was a, you know, the fight of the night. Correa against Duke. I'm going to have a go at saying her first name. I think they call her Betchy Correa, against Jessamyn Duke. To be honest with you, I'm going to call a spade on that one. That was a boring fight. That just, a lot of the women's fights, I am finding at the moment, have a bit of an intrigue about them. And we haven't seen the fighters so often, and some of them are literally brand new to kind of the viewers. So I actually am enjoying a lot of the women's fights, but this one was an absolute stinker. I don't really know what Duke thought she was doing, because she wasn't really landing any punches. She had her arm out a lot, but she wasn't really jabbing. And I've got a feeling that her corner was telling her that she was winning the fight, but I do not know why they were saying that, because she definitely wasn't. I personally don't think Correa poses much of a threat. I think she's a little bit undersized for 135. Maybe if they brought a 125 division in the future, which you've got to think is coming. I mean, they're already going to do a tough for the 115-pound, and they've already got 135-pound. I can't see a reason not to have 125-pound, other than the fact, I suppose, you could say there's not enough women competitors to kind of fill out these divisions, but I would disagree. I actually think there's probably better quality of women's MMA, say in the 125 division, than there are picking up fighters from regional scenes and making them fight in fight nights, and they're just not good enough. I would go down that route rather than going down the sort of fight night, oh, we'll get so and so from Backwater, Michigan, or so and so from, Gloucester, England, or, I'd rather see a women's fight at 125 than I would see those fights personally. But that's just my opinion, really. Correa made some sort of gesture towards the end. She put four fingers up in reference to this sort of stable of fighters that Ronda Rousey has. I think it's Rousey, Shafir, Baszler, and Duke. They're calling themselves the Four Horsewomen. So Correa kind of put four fingers up and pushed one down to kind of signify that she'd beaten Duke. Shafir, I think, is relatively new to MMA, so I can't see her probably fighting Correa for a long time. And Rousey is probably a bridge too far, really, for Correa. So I guess a fight with Baszler might makes oh, can't speak may make sense in future. I think she's awaiting a UFC opponent, Baszler, because she was injured, I believe, for another fight that they had set up for her. But I don't know, is a bit of rivalry in the women's division goes a long way, as we've seen with Tate and Rousey, so you never know. And then we've got Castillo and Brenneman. I kind of had the same feeling with this that I did with Benavidez and Elliott, in that Castillo didn't come out great, but as the round wore on, you kind of could see him improving and getting used to Brenneman's style, and I kind of always felt that Castillo would find some way to win that fight. And it was a exciting, impressive KO. I've heard quite a lot of talk online that one of the or sort of a laughable reason for hiring Charlie Brennan is when he gets knocked out, it looks good because of his hair. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it did look pretty good, so I can't see much wrong with that. And then Chris Beall beat Patrick Williams. That was a KO as well. I'm not quite sure which one got KO of the night. I think actually Beall Williams got KO of the night, because he landed a beautiful flying knee, like a perfect one. Like, if you were watching a tape trying to explain how to do one, you would want to watch this tape. So if you've got the ability to watch it again, if you didn't see it on the night or subsequently, try and have a look at that KO, because that was an absolutely cracking one. So I think that about does it for 172. I think we've covered all the fights, and we've obviously spoken a bit about picks. So as I say, that is Pick Zone. We do that for every event. For the pay-per-views, we do every fight, and for the sort of fight nights and tough finales and things like that, we tend to just do the main card, because it's difficult sometimes with the fighters that you've not seen so often to make a judgment call on whether they'll be any good. So we just find it's easier just to do the main card for the fight nights, etc., etc., and then the full card for a pay-per-view. So yeah, I think that's covered UFC 172. So we'll move on to Hot Topics. That's what I'm going to call this until I come up with something better. Hot Topics. So one thing that was doing the rounds, and I'm going to go back a couple of weeks here because obviously this is our first podcast, is whether Michael Bisping should consider retirement after the Tim Kennedy defeat. I'm kind of stealing that headline from Gareth A. Davies, the Telegraph correspondent for MMA. Love him, hate him, loathe him. Some do, some don't. I don't know, it's a tricky one. I think he writes some good stuff. He makes some basic errors, which, you know, you could kind of excuse from an amateur, but, you know, he's supposed to be a professional. And he sometimes comes off a little bit annoying. Bless him. I mean, this is just my opinion. You know, I'm not saying it's official that he's annoying, but I personally find him a little bit annoying. But he's doing stuff for the sport in the UK. So, you know, you can't really, you know, go down get, you know, you can't really have a go at him for that. So anyway, we're talking about Bisping possibly retiring. They're kind of pointing to the fact that he couldn't really do anything against Kennedy. He couldn't defend the takedown, which he has, or he used to be able to, against good wrestlers. Whether you argue that Kennedy is better than some of the wrestlers he's faced before, like Sonnen, for example, I don't really know. I don't know in depth enough about wrestling in the States to be able to say that. But certainly, he seemed to get taken down a lot easier than he has in past fights. So that was one thing. The kind of peppering jab that he used to throw, that didn't really seem to be there. I don't know whether that was sort of something to do with the fact that he was worried about getting taken down, maybe. I was going to say, obviously his injury played a part. I mean, only he knows how much his eye. I believe he had a surgery on his eye. I think he had like a detached retina or something. Someone will probably correct me on that, but I think that probably did have an effect on the fight. Whether it affected him to the point where he couldn't train 100% for as long as he wanted, or whether it had an effect of once he got hit in it a couple of times, he couldn't see out of it as well. Only he knows that, really. I think there's also a case to say that he maybe won one or two rounds. I wouldn't say he was destroyed in the fight, but you probably would say he was dominated. I mean, there's certainly no way that you could make a case for Bisping winning the fight. And I think kind of the reason why people are talking about maybe retiring is he's obviously had a lot of... he's had, I'd say, two or three fights that could possibly have propelled him into a middleweight title shot. He's lost them all. And now this was kind of a dangerous one for Bisping, because if he won, it wouldn't really do him a lot of favours, because Kennedy was ranked lower than him anyway, so he was kind of the favourite going in. But if he lost, it was going to prove that A, he wasn't as good as his ranking, and B, Kennedy was better than his. So you're kind of looking at that if Kennedy can beat him, the others who are near the top of the division, which is where Bisping was, such as, you know, Machida, Jacare Souza, Rockhold, Munoz, Musasi, you're thinking, if Kennedy can beat him, those guys probably are going to too, which actually puts him, I don't know, maybe 8th, 9th, 10th on the rankings. And I just can't really see him improving enough to now go up and beat those guys. I'm sort of sad to say it. He's getting on a bit now. He's had quite a few fights in the UFC. What I would say, though, on the flip side, is retire. I don't think so. I don't think he needs to retire. There's no shame in sort of fighting for the fans to kind of keep yourself up there. I know Dana keeps sort of banging on about saying, you know, if you want to fight in the UFC, you should be trying to fight for the title. And I guess Bisping possibly could tell himself that. But equally, if he had sort of four or five more fights, maybe a couple of kind of grudge fights, because he's always getting called out by everyone under the sun. You know, they all want to fight Bisping. I think because they think they can beat him, which sometimes is true, sometimes not. I think there's a few of those that could work, and I certainly think that in the UK he's a draw. So I would say the same as what I would have said for Hardy if he hadn't have had his sort of ongoing problems, in that even if he isn't a massive draw and loads of people don't want to see him in the States, I think if you put him on a card over here, the event probably gets a boost from that. Whether it sells out on the back of his name anymore is debatable, but certainly people, it would be a fight that people would think, oh, well, so-and-so is a headliner and Bisping's the co-main or something like that. It would kind of boost the card, I think, over here at the moment. And it probably would do, unless he lost another two or three, to be honest with you, because we always try and, you know, get behind our own and everything. So that's kind of my take on that. I definitely don't think he should retire. I think he's probably 3, 4, 5 fights away from that. Sorry, Mike, I don't think you're ever going to get that title shot. I'm sorry, I think that was your last chance to make a run, and it's gone now. So that's my sort of thoughts on that. One of the other things I just wanted to cover very briefly is after 172, Dana said that, he basically said that John Jones would fight where they wanted him to fight, and if that meant it was in Sweden against Gustafsson, then that could well be the case. He kind of countered that later on by saying the fight would do very well in Vegas, but I think that would be an intriguing one, because the rumour is that if they did it in Sweden, there is a kind of new purpose-built arena that holds, I think, about 25,000 seated. And what they would do is they would hold the event at US pay-per-view time. So that would be, I think I'd be right in saying it's about 3 or 4 a.m. in Sweden, which is a bit of an ask to get people to get up at that time. But, I mean, I am one of those people who have said, if we get better fights in the UK, we would be willing to get up in the middle of the night to watch them. So I can't really, you know, go against Swedish people saying the same thing. And I, to be fair, I think they probably would sell out. I mean, there's a big mixed martial arts following in Europe. I think quite a lot of people would travel to go and see that event, because it's a damn sight closer than Vegas. And, you know, I think you'd be in for an interesting fight. I don't see that one being a quick KO, you know, which you might sort of think, well, I paid a lot of money, I turned up and he just KO'd him after 10 seconds. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a close one again. So I think you're all virtually guaranteed a good, you know, good title fight there. So whether it actually happens in Sweden or not is another thing. I don't know what Jones has got to say on it. Although, like I say, Dana did kind of say he'll fight where we tell him to. But I think that's debatable, really. But I think a card like that in Sweden would be good for the Swedish MMA fans, and obviously fans across Europe. I'm trying to think back to when we last had I mean, I know we had an interim title fight in Wembley, but a proper official title fight in the UK, I'm trying to think, to be honest with you, it may have been 80, although I'm not sure if that was the interim belt at the time. If not, it might have been 75, which is a bit depressing, really. So, yeah, I think it would be a good thing if they could get it over in Sweden. I probably wouldn't make the trip myself for financial constraints, but, you know, again, I know a lot of people who would, and a lot of people who would enjoy it, so I'd be pulling for that if they want to do an opinion poll. Another thing to come out, come out in the last few days, actually came out this morning, I believe, is that Jim Miller is going to fight Donald Cerrone in the main event of Fight Night 35, which has kind of left everyone asking, what is going to happen with Khabib Nurmagomedov? I think I've said that right. Let's call him Nurmi from now on, just for the sake of my pronunciations. We're now reading this morning that part of the reason why they've booked Cerrone and Miller is that both Cerrone and Miller spoke about fighting Nurmi. However, the timetable looked like a sort of June-July fight. Now, what we're reading this morning is that Nurmagomedov is Muslim. We may well have already known that. I don't think that's breaking news. But that's actually Ramadan, I believe. So he will be fasting, which means that he can't really train. He can't have like a training camp, which actually gels with something he said a few days ago, which is that he'd like to fight in the fall, in the autumn. Which kind of makes sense, because obviously if he's fasting, I believe it's the end of June to the end of July, then he could have a sort of camp, you know, in August, and then he'd be ready to maybe fight late September, October. But that is the reason why Nurmagomedov has not been matched up with Cerrone or Miller, is just because otherwise Cerrone or Miller would have been on the shelf for a long time. Both kind of had relatively short fights with not taking much damage. So I think the UFC kind of put two and two together and just said, look, you know, perhaps the winner of that one then fights Nurmagomedov in the autumn or early winter. The other thing is, if those guys are dinged up or they don't want to do that fight with the winner of that one, or even maybe the loser of that one, TJ Grant's been off the radar for a little while. Kind of haven't had any recent reports about whether he's recovered from his concussion, but I guess if he has, he could probably be ready in about 2-3 months, if, depending on how much he's training, you know, how much training he's been doing while he's been injured. Or the other one is, you know, if they're looking at the fall, that may give them time to get a deal done with Nate Diaz to get him back into the fold. I think, I don't know whether it was Dana or his manager, someone said recently something about Nate wants to fight, or something like that. So whether that's kind of saying he wants to fight, but he's not going to fight for the money the UFC are giving, I'm not too sure. But I think a Nate versus Nurmagomedov fight would be good. Nate Diaz, obviously. But also, TJ Grant was in line for a title shot, so I would argue also that if TJ Grant could be fit for September, October, and Nurmi beats him, I think you could make a case for Nurmi fighting for the title, which I think is probably what they want to do. I don't think his English is that great, if at all. I can't really remember. I'm not really recalling his post-fight press conferences you know, chats in the octagon or anything. So there's an issue there. But I think he's one of these fighters who doesn't really need to talk for you to get excited about seeing him fight. He kind of has quite an intimidating, imposing presence, and you just kind of want to see how he's going to do against certain fighters. So I think whoever's got the title at the time should look out, because I think Nurmagomedov is a, you know, he's going to be up there. You know, whether he's good enough to win the title that time or maybe another year or two, who knows? But you know, there's some interesting fights up the top of that division, and that division is stacked as well. There's a lot of fights you can make in that division. So I think that's it for Hot Topics. I think we've covered everything there. So we're going to go into the burning question. That's what I'm going to call this one. Again, until I come up with something better or someone suggests something better, that's what it's going to be called, the burning question. So I've got a question from one of my colleagues, Paul Lanson, who we mentioned earlier on. He's asked, is the fact that BJ Penn versus Frankie Edgar is at featherweight enough to make this fight interesting? And also, if BJ wins, could it spark a comeback a la Randy when he beat Randy Couture when he beat Tim Sylvia? Well, that is an interesting question. Personally, I think the fact that it's at featherweight isn't enough to give one man the advantage over the other. In fact, if anything, you could argue that Edgar is probably the more natural featherweight out of the two men. And I think that I don't see how the drop to featherweight is going to suddenly give Penn an advantage over Edgar. Because I think Edgar was always the kind of nippier, more energetic fighter. And I don't see that BJ Penn is going to suddenly become that by going to 145. And Edgar's going to be slow and steady by going to 145. Is it interesting? I still think it's an interesting fight, if that's any consolation. I just don't think that the featherweight aspect makes a lot of difference. But I do think it's an interesting fight. I would really, really seriously hope that BJ has kind of come up with a few tricks to kind of counter Frankie's game. Because Frankie's game can be quite similar from fight to fight. But it's hard. It's one of those things you kind of know his style, but that doesn't mean that you can beat his style. So I think it's an interesting fight. But I don't think the featherweight kind of aspect will be decisive, really. If BJ wins, could it spark a comeback a la Randy when he beats Sylvia? I don't think so, personally. I still think there's a lot of people at 145 who could beat BJ. I think when Randy came back, the heavyweight division, I mean, it is now, but it was so thin when Randy came back. I mean, to be honest with you, I think some people still think that the fact that Tim Sylvia was ever the UFC heavyweight champion is a little bit of a knock on how good the heavyweight division was for a while back then. So do I think it could sort of spark BJ into going on a title run? I don't think so. I don't even know if he's got time, really. I mean, he's getting on a bit. It would only take kind of one brutal knockout and people would be saying he needs to go. I think people were already saying he should retire before he took this fight. So it's a good point. It's not impossible, but my gut says, can he go on a comeback to the title? I don't think so. I think it's highly unlikely. So we've got another question here. Who will be the next champion to lose their belt? Now, this is an interesting question because somewhat of it depends on when they are going to fight. The fights that are coming up with the titles on the line, you've got, obviously, Barão, I think, is fighting at 173, but I don't see Dillashaw posing a much of a problem to him, so I don't see Barão losing that anytime soon. 174, I think, is Johnson against Bagoutinov. Same thing, really. I think Bagoutinov is a good fighter, but I don't see him being able to beat Johnson. I think Johnson's so in and out. He scores a lot of points. I don't think Bagoutinov will be able to sort of keep up with him. So that's my gut feeling on that. So I don't see Johnson losing soon. The two fights at 175, Rousey against Davis. I don't see Rousey losing that, to be honest with you. Now, this is where I'm kind of in two minds because I do think Weidman will beat Munoz, but do I think... Machida. But do I think Machida has a possibility to win? I do, and I don't think it's a minute possibility. I think he's got a good chance. So, I'm split. But what I am going to say is, I'm going to say Johnny Hendricks. That's my call on that question. Who will be the next champ to lose their title? I'm going to say Johnny Hendricks. I just think someone, when he fights in, say, 3, 4, 5 months' time, whoever that may be, could beat him. That's just my gut feeling. I do think Weidman has a chance to lose to Machida, but I personally think he'll win, and so therefore I'm going to say Johnny Hendricks is the next, whoever he fights next, will take the belt off him. That's my opinion. He'll be the next one to lose his belt. Okay, next question. Who is the most exciting fighter in the UFC right now? Okay, well, I had a little bit of a chance to think about this, but I've gone for a European fighter in Alexander Gustafsson, just because I think he always goes out to win a fight, and he's not too predictable. He's got good submissions. He doesn't really stop. He doesn't rest for like a round. Or I know you could argue that, obviously, I mean, John Jones is a champion at light heavyweight right now, but I don't always think he's the most exciting fighter. You know, there's only so many of these sort of oblique kicks and stuff you want to see, and sort of weird yanking on arms and stuff like that. I'm kind of more excited to see people fight John Jones than I am to see Jones fight, if that makes sense. And that's kind of why I've gone for Gustafsson. It was close because I'm a really, really big fan of Henan Barao as well. I think he's a very exciting fighter. Same principle. He always goes out, always keeps going. He can bang. He can, you know, grapple. But I've gone for Alexander Gustafsson because, to me, if I'm going to watch an event and Gustafsson's fighting, I'm excited about that fight. So that's my call right now. Most exciting fighter in the UFC is Alexander Gustafsson. We've got a question here from my other colleague, Fraser Ryan. He's put, does Dana White's hypocrisy over his and Ronda Rousey's comments towards Cyborg Santos come as a surprise, given the UFC have suspended fighters in the past for the same comments? Yeah, I was having a chat with another friend of mine about this the other day. Now I'm reading the question, does it come as a surprise? It doesn't surprise me, but doesn't mean it's not wrong, if that makes sense. I'm not surprised that the things that John Jones, this whole issue with the Instagram getting hacked, slash stolen, slash someone else had it and he didn't mean to, slash it was at the phone shop, that kind of got a little bit brushed under the carpet. And obviously with Rousey's comments, if you didn't hear them, basically she called Cyborg Santos an it. Said she'd basically injected so many steroids that she wasn't a she anymore, she was an it. Which I think is, that's borderline of decency, really, to say. I think you're very, very close to stepping over the line with that comment, really. But actually, Dana White kind of said, well, no, it's not the same as what we've penalised people for in the past. And he even went as far as to make a sort of a joke about Cyborg and say that he saw her at the World MMA Awards and she looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress. Well, yes, that is mildly funny. I'm sure Dana thought it was very funny. But that's a person you're talking about. That's what kind of gets my goat. And that's Dana White saying that. He should really be impartial. This is something that I've kind of heard guys on Junkie talk about. Ben Folks is one of my favourite writers, favourite people to listen to. So if you want to listen to another podcast, go and listen to the Co-Main Event podcast. It's brilliant with Chad Dundas and Ben Folks. And he kind of said, and I agree, that the UFC, because they're by far and away the biggest promotion, are kind of the representatives of the sport. And if the head of the representative of the sport is going to make a joke about a female fighter who's, you know, steps in the ring and basically say she looks like a man, I don't think that that's right, because I don't think in any other professional sport, I'm not a big follower of things like NFL and stuff, but I follow the MLB, the baseball. They have a commissioner, Bud Selig. Obviously you have people in like the Premier League for the football, Richard Scudamore. I cannot see him ever saying that a player who he doesn't like looks like a woman, or, you know, something like that. It's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of jarring. And it kind of goes against some of the things they've done before, where they've prosecuted, well, say prosecute is probably a bit of a strong word, but they've penalised people for kind of, fined and suspended, I think, Matt Mitrione for comments he made about Fallon Fox, quite rightly. I think Matt Brown had to apologise officially because he made some sort of comment about women should only fight in MMA if they're topless. I'm pretty sure that's what he said. So, yeah, surprised? No, because the people that have made the comments and the people that are kind of getting stuff brushed under the carpet a little bit are the champs, and they're the popular champs. But does that make it right? Absolutely not, for those very reasons. So hopefully that's your question answered. Got another question here. Why is Andrei Arlovsky back in the UFC? Shouldn't they be looking at developing young heavyweight talent? Another good question. It's a tough one. Yes, they should be looking at developing young heavyweight talent. I think the argument perhaps at the moment is there isn't really any. And I think that's partly down The people may have other opinions on this, but I think it's partly down to the fact that everyone who's a heavyweight is now trying to make light heavyweight to give themselves a massive advantage. And a lot of times in heavyweights fight, you look at them and think, if they worked out a bit more and they lost a bit of that bulk, you know, they could probably make 205. And I think there's kind of an incentive to get to 205. If you're 240 pounds, if you can sort of, you know, get yourself down to 230 and then cut the weight, you know, I'll say 230, let's say 225, and then you can cut the 20 pounds to get to 205, why wouldn't you do it? So I think there's very few true heavyweights out there. So I don't necessarily agree in bringing Arlovsky back from that point of view. I think the problem is they know that the heavyweight division is just stick thin, and they just want to name another name fighter in there, I think, so that they can basically say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so can fight Arlovsky next, and it just kind of throws another person in the hat to for existing heavyweights to be matched up with. So I think that's probably why they've done it. Again, doesn't really make it right, but I can kind of see why they've done it. But yeah, I mean, the heavyweight division is stick thin at the moment, so I think they'll probably just get in who they can. You know, I could see maybe another heavyweight tough at some point in the next year or two, just to kind of flesh out the division. But I mean, a lot of the fighters in the heavyweight division, I think if they were in a lot of other divisions, they probably would have been cut, but because it's so thin, they've kept their job, and then maybe some of them are getting their jobs back, purely because it's so thin. So we could really do with a sort of a surge of new talent, you know, from sort of, say, like, number five or six ranked downwards. We could really do with someone to kind of make a few waves, really. Next question. What do you think of the fights announced for the Dublin card so far? Okay, so if you didn't see it this week, the details for the UFC's return to Dublin been revealed. I think the date had been kind of on there for a while, in July. July 19th at Dublin's O2 Arena. But obviously no fights at that point had been confirmed. So we've now got, I believe, six fights confirmed. So I'll just run you through them very, very briefly. At the bottom, Cody Donovan, Nikita Krylov. That's a typical fight night bout, really. Phil Harris versus Neil Seary. I was actually in favour of that fight going down in London, because I thought Galdino should have fought Pickett. They should have moved Galdino up to fight Pickett and let Harris fight Seary. They didn't, for whatever reason. And actually, Seary gave Pickett a good fight in the end, so I suppose it wasn't the worst thing in the world. But Harris got choked out dead quick, so that just proved he wasn't really up to the standard of Galdino. But yeah, Harris versus Seary, I think that'll be an interesting fight. Again, it's a typical fight night bout. Not much international interest in that one, but hey, you know, could be a good fight. We've got Ilia Latifi against Tom Lawler. Again, it's another kind of a fight night bout, a throwaway bout in a way. I mean, Latifi was impressive against Diabate Diabate was coming towards the end of his career. He said he was going to retire. But Latifi did look good. Lawler's one of those guys who he'll always give you a fight. So it'd be an interesting test for Latifi. I think this would kind of be the one to show us whether Latifi is ready to kind of go in there with the main UFC, or whether he's going to be a sort of perennial European fight night guy. So that could be an interesting one. We've got Ian McCall, Brad Pickett, which is a kind of a rebooking of the original fight that was supposed to go down in London, which I was very disappointed that didn't happen, because that was basically the one fight I was looking forward to. So basically, they've just rebooked that fight. I mean, that is an interesting one. And I do think that the UFC would love to have to do Pickett against Demetrius Johnson, purely because, A, it would do numbers, because they're both, you know, come out to fight. And B, Pickett has a win over Johnson, so they can kind of use that as a motivational tool, you know, say, to sort of hype the fight, in that, you know, okay, Johnson's a champion, but he has a loss to Pickett, so, you know, Pickett's a genuine challenger. So that should be a good one. The co-main, I think it's been announced as a co-main event, will be Ryan LaFleur versus Gunnar Nelson. That's a good fight. I'm a bit surprised that's the co-main. I think McCall Pickett probably should be the co-main, with maybe LaFleur and Nelson underneath. But I mean, Nelson, he's a brilliant fighter. I think he fought Akhmadov in London. I thought that was going to be a close fight. I wasn't sure how he's going to do. Akhmadov is a tough guy, but Nelson absolutely handled him. So this is another one where I sort of think, I think Nelson is good enough to be in the main UFC as it is, but I think if he beats LaFleur, he may well then get like a top guy, a top test, which I think he deserves, to be fair, because he's overcome everything so far, you know, with aplomb. So hopefully this will sort of catapult him up the rankings, and being the co-main, maybe it'll get him a bit more recognition sort of worldwide, maybe. And then the main event, which was not initially announced, but they announced it, I think, the day after, is Conor McGregor versus Cole Miller. I've seen a few people have mentioned to me that is Conor McGregor ready to headline a fight card? I would say probably anywhere else in the world, no. But I mean, if you're from Ireland, that's your guy. You know, it would be a bit like saying, well, you know, is Bisping going to headline a card in Michigan or something? Generally speaking, no, unless it's like a fight, you know, like another fight night or something. But mainly people want to see their guy, and McGregor is so popular, I'm really honestly not surprised that that's the main event. And to be honest with you, it doesn't even have to be the fight that you're most looking forward to. It's just the last fight on the card, to be honest with you. And I think if that means that the fans in Dublin can go home, you know, can go into the last fight knowing that their guy is fighting and that he wins, then they're going to go home happy, and you know, it kind of works out well. So I think Miller will be a tough test for him, but I think it's one that McGregor needs to overcome. It's one of those ones that if he loses it, the hype train will be derailed, because if you can't beat Carl Miller, then you're never going to win the title. So I think it's one that he needs to win, but if he does, you know, it's kind of works out well all round. So I think that's just about going to do it for this week's burning questions, or the burning question. I have to have a think about what we're going to call that. So hopefully that's been somewhat informative to you guys. I'm hoping to get my colleagues in doing the podcast with me at some point, if we can work out the sort of technical aspects of it, maybe get some new features, bits and pieces like that, make it all a bit more jazzy, as it were. Just a sort of a side note, if you're interested in writing for the site, we kind of have this policy that we don't force anyone to adhere to deadlines. You can write about what you want within reason. You know, basically there's no commitment. Even things like Pick Zone that we do regularly, if you want to do it, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. You know, if you just want to write one article ever because something really gets your goat, you know, we'll put it on the site. If you want to write more often, or you have an idea for a feature or something, then that's fine. All I would say is just don't overcommit. You know, don't say that you can do something once a day if you can't. You know, it's better to say that you can't and then be able to do more than vice versa. So if you are interested in writing for us, the email address to get in touch is editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, at Brits and Pieces MMA. So that would be BRITSANDPIECESMMA.co.uk. If you send an email to that address, that'll come through to me, and obviously we can take it from there. We'd love to have a few more guys on the team, you know, make things a bit more interesting. And I think that's probably about it. As I say, I hope you've enjoyed listening to the first ever podcast. And if you have any comments, you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at Brits Pieces MMA. There's no and or ampersand. It's just Brits, B-R-I-T-S. And then Pieces, P-I-E-C-E-S, MMA. So no and. You know, you can visit our website. It's just www.britsand.com. And that's the spell and, A-N-D, piecesmma.co.uk. Check it out, see what you think, and hopefully we'll hear from you soon. So this is me, Duncan Price, signing off. This has been a Brits and Pieces MMA recording. To clarify, all opinions and comments on this podcast are just that, opinions, and none of them should be taken as fact. See you next time.